Welcome to the Shortwave Report. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. The Shortwave Report is a 30-minute review of news and opinion heard on the shortwave radio and the internet in Northern California. Listening to international broadcasts at home is quite easy. You just need a shortwave radio with a schedule of English language broadcast or a computer or smartphone with an internet connection. To help you with this, I'll announce times, frequencies, and website addresses at the conclusion of each series of stories. At the website for this show, that's outfarpress.com, you can listen to the past 5 shortwave reports, find advice for listening to shortwave at home, and find internet links for global news sources. Please check it out and tell a friend. In today's edition, you'll hear reports from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, NHK Japan, Radio Havana Cuba, and Russia's Sputnik Radio. We'll begin with Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle. First, a series of short reports about COVID-19 around the globe. Denmark has eased its lockdown, opening primary schools and daycare centers under strict conditions. There has been international condemnation for Trump's decision to freeze funding for the World Health Organization, especially at a time when other world leaders are calling for unity in fighting the pandemic. The World Health Organization says it regrets Trump's action, saying that the developing world is now at a much greater risk of many diseases as well as COVID-19. Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle.
The number of confirmed coronavirus infections has passed 2 million, with more than 130,000 reported deaths. But the WHO warns the world has not yet seen the peak of the outbreak.
A French court has ordered e-commerce company Amazon to limit deliveries to essentials and to conduct a thorough assessment of health measures at its warehouses. Denmark is reopening childcare centers, primary schools, and some shops today. It was one of the first countries in Europe to impose a lockdown. And Finland is lifting roadblocks around its capital, its first measure to ease restrictions there. New Zealand's Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern says she and other top officials are taking a 20% pay cut for the next 6 months. Ardern said the step was a symbolic acknowledgement of the struggle faced by many New Zealanders. Frontline staff will not be affected.
And the retail giant Amazon says it may stop all services in France after a court ordered it to only deliver essential products and to improve worker protections. And the G20 group of leading economies has agreed to suspend debt payments from the world's poorest countries until the end of the year to free up money to combat the pandemic.
A study of Dutch blood donors has shown that around 3% have developed antibodies against the virus. Authorities say that suggests several hundred thousand people in the country may have already had the disease. Spain has recorded a further 551 new virus deaths, bringing the total in the country to over 19,000. But the increase in new cases is lower than peak levels in March.
Australia's Prime Minister Scott Morrison says the country will keep lockdown restrictions in place for at least another month. In the meantime, it will expand testing and improve its ability to contact trace.
Denmark has eased its coronavirus lockdown by reopening primary schools and daycare centres today. But many parents are unconvinced that this is a good idea, meaning thousands of children have been kept at home. Denmark has seen more than 6,000 infections and nearly 300 deaths, though the rate of new cases has been falling. Scientists point out that children are the least affected by the coronavirus.
It's back to school for 7-year-old Aster from Copenhagen. Rule 1, hand sanitizer before going in. While there's relief, there are also concerns. Many parents are worried schools are reopening too soon. The difficult transition is for us parents. We have to hand over our children. That goes against our instincts as parents to protect our children. Denmark is reopening creches and primary schools up to year 5 under strict conditions. There has to be at least 2 meters between desks in classrooms. Many are simply too small for that. We've split most classes into three groups. That basically means we need three times as many staff. So we've brought in all our teachers and some extra ones as well. Not all schools are ready. Some will reopen their doors in the next few days. Denmark has a schedule for getting back to normal. The government wants to bring forward its plans to get other areas of daily life going again. The politicians will have to work out which ones.
Well, there's been international condemnation of U.S. President Donald Trump's decision to freeze U.S. funding of the World Health Organization. Trump, who himself has been under fire for his handling of the pandemic, is accusing the U.N. agency of failing in its response to the coronavirus outbreak. The WHO has defended itself, saying it has issued, or it did issue, strong and timely warnings.
The WHO failed in its basic duty to save lives. Those were the words of President Trump as he announced a freeze on funding for the UN agency.
Today I'm instructing my administration to halt funding of the World Health Organization while a review is conducted, as the organization's leading sponsor, the United States, has a duty to insist on full accountability. Always
health. Trump has repeatedly criticized the WHO throughout the pandemic, this time claiming its bias towards China is responsible for the virus's rapid spread to other parts of the world.
Had the WHO done its job to get medical experts into China to objectively assess the situation on the ground and to call out China's lack of transparency, the outbreak could have been contained at its source with very little death.
Trump says the roughly $400 million in annual contributions will now be paused. The decision drew a sharp rebuke from the German foreign minister, who tweeted,
"Blaming does not help. The virus knows no borders. We should work together closely against COVID-19. One of the best investments is to strengthen the UN, especially the underfunded WHO, for example, in the development and distribution of tests and vaccines."
Bill Gates, too, called the move dangerous. The US is the worst affected country in the world, with more recorded cases and deaths than anywhere else. Trump's handling of the pandemic has also been widely criticized, and his opponents say this latest announcement is nothing more than a deflection tactic.
Well, as we said, lots of international reactions to Trump's decision. Today, former UK Prime Minister Gordon Brown, who was calling for a stronger global response to the pandemic, told DW News what he thinks of the move by the US president.
On March the 26th, Donald Trump signed a communique that he was present at the meeting of the G20 when they said they would strengthen the WHO's mandate, they would increase the funding for disaster response, they would give more money so it could develop a new virus, and they would help it deal with the problems facing the developing countries. This is not only an illogical step by the president, it's an act of self-harm, because to protect ourselves locally in Germany or in America, we have to act globally. And if this disease has a second and third round in Africa or in the developing world, and then comes back to the West, then we'll be to blame for not helping those African countries that the WHO is intent on supporting protect themselves when they have underdeveloped health systems and poor social safety nets and can't adopt the social distancing and other measures that we're adopting in the West.
And that was the former UK Prime Minister there, Gordon Brown, speaking with us earlier today.
For his part, the WHO says it regrets Trump's move.
The World Health Organization's response to the White House on Wednesday was clear. The world's most vulnerable may now be at greater risk.
WHO works to improve the health of many of the world's poorest and most vulnerable people. WHO is not only fighting COVID-19.
Trump's decision to cut WHO funding amid a pandemic has stunned the global community and drawn criticism from experts back home.
Credible concerns absolutely can be raised, but right now, from the public health perspective, we believe that the president should reconsider his decision.
Despite the backlash, Trump on Wednesday reiterated his concerns over the WHO's handling of the early stages of the outbreak.
And you see what happened to Italy, you see what happened to Spain, you see what happened to France. WHO's guidance had failed to control their borders at a very crucial phase, quickly unleashing the contagion around the world.
The U.S. is now the worst affected country worldwide, with more cases and more deaths than anywhere else. White House critics believe more should have been done by the Trump administration and that the president is now deflecting blame. The United Nations Health Agency says unity is needed now more than ever.
Those reports were from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, which may be heard at a combined audio-video website, dw.com. Deutsche Welle is producing excellent virus reports daily in English, which you can easily find at dw.com. Next, NHK Japan. More stories of the pandemic spread around Europe. Americans in a number of states left their homes to protest the lockdown, organized by conservative groups who view it as an assault on freedom. China has approved human tests for three experimental vaccines against the virus. NHK Japan.
Europe remains the second largest coronavirus hotspot after the United States. In Italy, there are still hundreds of new cases being confirmed each day. But there was a small glimmer of hope. On Wednesday, the number hit its lowest level since the middle of last month. Even so, there is little relief from the unrelenting daily tally of deaths. Sirens still occasionally break the calm of emptied French streets. The country is in its fifth week of lockdown. More cases are being confirmed on a French aircraft carrier. Hundreds of sailors aboard the Charles de Gaulle have the virus. At the same time, Germany plans to gradually ease its national lockdown. The country will start that work next week when it allows some small shops to reopen. Then, in early May, some schools will open their doors, but restaurants will remain closed except for takeout and delivery services. Major events are banned until the end of August. The situation in Russia is getting worse as confirmed cases topped 24,000 on Wednesday. One doctor used social media to shed light on the outbreak's crushing effect on the healthcare system. Moscow has seen 60% of the country's infection. In response, the government is imposing strict new conditions on travel within the city. Americans in a number of states have left their homes to protest orders to stay at home. They're angry with what they say are restrictions on their freedoms. They want to get back to work. NHK World's Catherine Kobayashi reports.
Americans don't usually volunteer to get stuck in a traffic jam. But drivers from across Michigan came here to show their frustration. Conservative groups organized the protest against the state governor's order to stay at home.
And I have bills to pay, and I want to keep my credit good, and this affects, I know if this is affecting my family, it's affecting thousands and millions of other families.
The millions are growing frustrated with practices they hadn't even heard of a few months ago. Social distancing, self-isolation, shelter in place. Protesters in North Carolina say they'll return every week until the state reopens. Demonstrators in Ohio carried a similar message to their governor. They, too, want to return to work. They're encouraged by the president's hints to reopen the country, even by the end of the month. New York's governor says a reopening can't happen all at once, that any return would have to go in phases. And he says if people don't keep their distance, infections could rise. Cuomo says that developing a vaccine could take a year or more. And he says if people don't learn the lessons of this situation, then all of this will have been in vain.
Meanwhile, China's state-run Xinhua News Agency reported that the country has approved human tests for three experimental vaccines against the virus. One of them is the first vaccine in the world to move to the second phase of a three-phased clinical trial. Johns Hopkins University says over 1.9 million people around the world have tested positive, and more than 120,000 have died.
Those reports were from NHK Radio Japan. They have altered their schedule and format and are now heard from 9:30 to 10 p.m. at 5975-7245 and 11970, or on the web at www.3.nhk.or.jp. All the times I announce are for Pacific Daylight Saving Time, so please adjust them to your time zone. On to Radio Havana, Cuba. Cuba is conducting a clinical trial for a new COVID vaccine. Medical staff in Brazil and Human Rights Watch are criticizing Bolsonaro's handling of the pandemic with a lack of equipment and extreme working hours. The disease is spreading in England's Belmarsh prison, where Julian Assange was denied bail while awaiting an extradition decision. Then a viewpoint on the unnoticed annual Day of the Political Prisoner, April 17th, which was established in 2005. Radio Havana, Cuba.
Cuba is conducting a clinical trial for a vaccine developed with its own technology and aimed at activating the innate immune system to combat the new coronavirus SARS-CoV-2, which causes COVID-19. During the Mesa Rodonda, the Roundtable TV program aired last night on Monday night, dedicated to Cuban biotechnology, Geraldo Guillen, the research director of the Center for Genetic Engineering and Biotechnology, explained that the drug is undergoing clinical trials at the Luis Diaz Soto Hospital here in Havana. The trial involves volunteer patients suspected of being carriers of the disease. Guillen added that it is applied nasally and sublingually under the tongue, and that encouraged results have already been observed regarding the activation of the innate immune system, which is very important for successfully combating this disease. Guillen said that the Cuban researchers have been able to make the laboratory technologies available to this research in record time. After these first results, Cuban scientists will continue with the trials and analyzing the results. Brazilian nurses have disapproved of Jair Bolsonaro's management of the ongoing COVID-19 health crisis in Brazil. Doctors and health workers in Sao Paulo joined the critics, rejecting the president's handling of COVID-19. They paid tribute to their colleagues who died during the pandemic and denounced the lack of medical equipment to combat the new coronavirus. According to local media in Brazil, the Bolsonaro government maintains health professionals, forcing them to work unlimited hours, which increases fatigue, reduces immunity, and leaves workers even more exposed to the coronavirus. Human Rights Watch has condemned the Brazilian government's mismanagement. Among the arguments it puts forward is that Bolsonaro's disregard for the health minister's efforts to deal with the virus. They also point to his negligence and responsibility in managing the disease. Julian Assange has revealed to a friend the harrowing details of his life in Belmarsh Prison in London. The WikiLeaks founder is still confined at the UK maximum security prison, despite it being stricken with the coronavirus. COVID-19 has spread around Belmarsh Prison to such an extent that the prison is, quote, barely functioning. As many as 150 prison staff members have been forced into self-isolation as they might have contracted the coronavirus. The prison admitted in mid-March, 1 month ago, that the disease had already reached its premises and has now reported one coronavirus inmate death. Julian Assange has been denied bail by the British justice system as he awaits a decision on his extradition to the United States. On clearly political charges of conspiring to hack government computers and breaking espionage, the United States wants Julian Assange bad. His so-called crime was revealing war crimes and crimes against humanity by the United States in Iraq and Afghanistan.
As the world is turned upside down due to this COVID-19 pandemic that has caught the attention and concern of every government, there's a probability that next April 17th, International Day of the Political Prisoner, goes unnoticed. The day was established in 2005 after a meeting held the previous year in Donostia, where Basque groups, Palestinians and Argentinians, among others, agreed to hold a conference aimed at demanding the freedom of those imprisoned for political reasons. Thereafter, every year, revolutionary organizations, progressive political parties, humanitarian groups and people of goodwill pay tribute to those in prison for defending the rights of others, protect life and environment, and those who face a destructive power of transnational corporations. The movement has expanded as the judicial and political factors of the social struggle increase. Mapuches in Chile and Mayas in Guatemala and Honduras are being accused of terrorism for exercising the legitimate right to defend their lands and natural resources. It is estimated that there are more than 10,000 political prisoners in Latin America, particularly in the northern Central American triangle, Colombia, Chile, Paraguay, Ecuador, and after the coup d'etat against Evo Morales, also in Bolivia. However, this date will be a good opportunity to remember all Palestinians who were unjustly arrested in Gaza Strip and the West Bank, where the Israel's Zionist regime overlooks the fact that some of these prisoners are children. Yet, the attention will be most certainly focused on the oldest political prisoner at this time, Leonard Peltier, who has spent 43 of his 75 years of age in American prisons, condemned for demanding guarantees for indigenous communities. And what about Julian Assange, subjected to brutal conditions in a British prison and with the risk of being extradited to the United States, where he could be sentenced to death? We must not allow the harsh reality imposed by the current pandemic let us forget these and other names condemned for believing in the establishment of equity, justice, and solidarity in the world.
Those reports were from Radio Havana, Cuba. Cuba's web stream worked well this week at their website radiohc.cu, but their podcast links remain unavailable. On shortwave, Cuba may be heard from noon to 1 p.m. at 15140 and from 6 p.m. to midnight at either 6000, 6060, 6100, or 6165. If you have questions or comments about the shortwave report or could make a donation for production cost of this unfunded program, I may be reached through the website and PayPal or by writing to Dan Roberts at P.O. Box 1162, Willits, California, 95490. Almost all the funding this freely distributed program receives is from individual listener donations. Please, if you find this program beneficial, help support it like listeners in Upper Lake and Willits, California did this week. We will conclude with Sputnik Radio. On his program called Going Underground, Afshin Ratansi interviewed Ban Ki-moon, former Secretary General of the United Nations. In this excerpt, Ban speaks about the importance of the climate crises around the world and its importance even when a disease like the new coronavirus is dominating the current news. Sputnik Radio.
To today's guest, the 8th Secretary General of the United Nations, Ban Ki-moon, who was Secretary General during the 2013 to 2016 Ebola epidemic. He joins me via Skype from Seoul. Britain has had to call off its next round of global climate summits, the COP summit. What can we learn from coronavirus about the importance of, say, the Green New Deal, obviously rejected by the White House, but I understand that you've done a lot of work on promoting the idea of Green New Deals all around the world.
There is clearly a very close relationship between addressing climate action, climate change, as well as addressing this pandemic crisis at this time. What I'm concerned is that because of this pandemic crisis, I'm afraid that the efforts and the passion to address the climate crisis at this time may be undermined, may be downplayed by the people around the world. What is more important at this time that through European Green New Deal or other, according to Paris Climate Change Agreement, we must take urgent action before it is too late. As you know, as world global temperature is heating up, there is much and much more and more possibility of this kind of viruses, pandemics may happen, because there may be unwanted way or mix of all these pathogens among, you know, animals and other natural conditions. Therefore, it is very important at this time, learning from this crisis, we must take urgent action to address the climate crisis before it is too late.
But the fossil fuel companies that have for long doubted the existence of climate change, their bosses were in the White House the other day. None of them are saying there is any evidence whatsoever that climate change contributes to pandemics.
I'm really urging, as the European Union has announced this European Green Deal, by at the latest by 2050, all these fossil fuels should be, you know, transformed into renewable energy. In that regard, I applaud many European countries who have already announced that by 2035, 2040, or by 2015, most of the all European Union countries except Poland have committed to be a fossil fuel free continent by that time. I'm also urging many, many countries other than the European countries to do that. In that regard, I'm also urging the government of the United States to reconsider and return to this climate change agreement as soon as possible. This is their political and moral responsibility as the most important, resourceful and powerful countries. As you may remember, it was the United States and China, you know, working together with the United States and other United Nations with other member states to really bring this climate change agreement to successful conclusion. Now that it is already fifth year this year since the adoption of climate change agreement and also sustainable development goals, is a good lessons which we have to learn from this pandemic crisis, that we need to exert much, much more effort on a much, much speedier way to address climate crisis.
Former UN Secretary General, thank you.
That interview was from Afshin Ratansi on Sputnik Radio, the current name for the Voice of Russia, available online at rt.com. One of my goals in producing this show is to encourage people like you to listen to international broadcast, get a global perspective. You could use a shortwave radio at home. It's far simpler than you might think, though interference from electronic devices makes it much more difficult. If you use the internet, listening globally is easier and noise-free. See the links at this program's website. Every Thursday evening, I post a new shortwave report at the website for this show. That's www.outfarpress.com. At my website, you can also listen to past shows. Please consider making a safe donation online through PayPal. There's a link at my website along with the podcast link, and get advice for listening at home. The Shortwave Report, which is now in its 24th year of production, remains free to rebroadcast upon notification. The Shortwave Report is produced and distributed off the electrical grid in Northern California using solar panels. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. Thanks for listening.